Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride is here, too, because she's got to join us and bring us some really cool information, some good stuff that we need to know about. The first thing up is about the stock, about really, but really about the economy. And so let's get her in here. Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back.
Hey, Jim. Thanks. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
And, okay, folks, here's the first line of the letter this week. With financial markets in a tizzy, that's T-I-Z-Z-Y, folks.
Yes.
All right, Joan, what's a tizzy?
Oh, you want the technical explanation?
Yeah, I
want to
know. Is this like a highly technical financial term?
You're right. They're zigging and zagging. One day they're up, one day they're down.
A tizzy, okay. Well, I love that. So worries about the economy are mounting. But, you know, Joan, the economy is really kind of schizoid, isn't it? I mean, it's getting kind of a bipolar these days. I mean, you know, we got some stuff that's going off the charts high. We got some stuff that's going off the charts low. Some things that should be high or low. Some things that should be low or high. I mean, we got housing and you know, bad news in housing. Got bad news in the fuel. We got good news in employment. We got bad news in you know, this and that. I mean, it's kind of a freaky thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and all the Fed can worry about is inflation.
Well, that's their main job.
Well, I guess, but
that's their main job. But
I don't think their job is to push us into a recession, though.
Well, that's true, but they've got a tough job. One of the things you guys, I mentioned a minute ago, Joan, that you guys talk about this week in the letter is housing.
That's right.
And when I talk to people that I know more about this than I do, and I ask them, I said, how bad is housing? They say it's bad.
And I think it's bad in more places than had been the case maybe a few months ago.
Well, remember when we were talking about a housing bubble, which was about the prices of housing, not anything, but just the maybe overvalued housing.
Right.
And I always said that I thought that was a regional, maybe even a neighborhood type thing, not a national thing. But now the housing challenge we have is in the area of mortgages, mortgage lending, right?
Right. And, you know, originally people were saying, oh, it's just the subprime sector, meaning the folks that couldn't afford loans that were encouraged to take out these so-called subprime mortgages. But now this, the problems seem to be spreading. And I guess the thing that worries me is that that is making mortgage lenders kind of clamp down and tighten up, and which will make it more difficult for the average person to get a loan.
Right, right. Well, you know, the pendulum always swings from one end to the other, right?
Rather than we were at irrational exuberance in the mortgage market at one point, and now we're all the way over to the other end, I think.
Well, I think it was more like Charles McKay's comment in the title of one of his books from the 1800s, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, I think is what we were.
Was that a bestseller in your day?
It was back in my day, exactly, 1848. But anyway, and we had a mortgage company to go back to take Chapter 11 this week.
And I forgot the name of it, but
American Mortgage,
right.
I think
there you
it
go.
Was. They took Chapter 11 this week. I think that
That's
was the
right.
name of the company. And so, yeah, and it's now, you know, Joan, one of the things, though, that I think that I really believe that this mortgage thing and this people are talking about all the potential foreclosures and all that. I just believe that it's not going to be as bad in the long run as some people might think it is. And I'm not that much of a hand-wringer about this. And here's why. We still have the underlying asset. This is not like some stock value that evaporates and nobody has anything to show for
it. Goes into the ether, right.
Exactly. We still have the underlying fixed asset. That's one thing. that can somebody can do something about. Somebody, you know, maybe somebody's going to lose some money, but it's not completely lost. The other thing,
right.
Joan, is most of the people who are in jeopardy of defaulting on their mortgage have jobs, maybe good jobs. So it's hard for me to believe that a mortgage company is not going to is going to let those houses come back to them and get nothing.
Sure, They would rather not be sitting with the
house.
They're
going to negotiate with these people.
They would rather work something out.
Aren't they?
Sure.
I mean, these people have jobs. They probably have good jobs. I mean, see, to me, Joan, this is where it's different from, say, the 1970 housing crash that we had back in 74 and 75. Because you had a lot of people out of work back in those days, too.
That's true. Now, not to rain on your parade, but the one other consideration, though, is that in many of these cases, these were no down payment loans.
Yeah.
And when you have a no down payment loan, you often have a borrower who really has no, vested interest in the house and is more
right.
willing to walk away and just leave the keys with the lender, and then they're stuck with the inventory.
And that could happen. But I still think, though, if you've got a job, you have a house that you love. You know, a lot of these people bought more house than they could afford because that's what subprime allowed them to do.
Right.
They basically broke fundamental lending rules is really what happened and allowed people to borrow more money than they really could afford. But these people have the home that they love probably, and I think they may be more invested than you think, Joan. I think those things will ameliorate this potential crisis, and I think a couple of years we'll look back and say, you know what, that wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be.
Boy, you're so optimistic. If I didn't know better, I'd say you worked for Kiplinger.
I guess I've been hanging around you guys too long.
Yeah,
but no, I think
so.
That's the case. Now, oil prices. Here's what's pretty silly. You know, we had this last week. We had oil prices go to a near record, or maybe have gone to a record, but then within 3 days it pulled way back.
But the other thing too, which I don't really understand, I need to get with our energy editor and ask him what's going on. Gas prices in my area have been falling.
They've come down, haven't they?
They've come way down to maybe to $2.60, $2.70 a gallon in
about
my area.
About 40 cents a gallon across the
Washington,
country.
Washington D.C. That's huge.
Yeah, I know it, and so that's a very interesting thing, and
yeah.
So much of our energy price. I mean, people are still saying. I heard Steve Forbes repeat something last week in a speech that he had said on this show, and that is maybe as much as $25 a barrel is speculation.
Wow.
The price of oil. Yeah, it's still pretty high. 20 after the hour. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. And companies come together and buy and sell and do business and have build relationships and you know, people consume things and people make things and sell them to people who consume those things. That's the marketplace. That's Main Street. The
yeah.
stock market benefits from all that. It is a derivative. The stock market is a derivative of all that activity, isn't it?
Well, that's true.
And so I just think, you know, one of the things you guys point out, I think, in your letter here somewhere is that if the stock market should happen to go bad, that consumers and business owners will be demoralized and all that sort of thing. I think we need to put all this in perspective. The stock
right.
market is a derivative of all of our activity in the marketplace. If we don't do what we do, if we don't innovate, if we don't create, if we don't build and sell to people who consume, then there is no stock market.
It's meaningless without the
That's
economic
right.
activity, sure.
But so the stock market is the tail, and the marketplace is the dog. Sometimes the tail wags the dog, and I don't like that, Joan.
Well, especially since the stock market is always viewed as a leading economic indicator.
Yeah.
So people stand there and say, well, the stock market is going down, so the economy must be going bad.
Exactly.
So that's the tail wagging dog aspect of it.
That's exactly right. And see, what gets
How
me
How do we
is,
get to that point?
Well, I don't know, but I'm not happy about it. I'll give you another example, Joan. As we're talking about this stock market portion of the Kiplinger letter, Joan, China has got a lot of problems.
Yes.
They've got a lot of problems in many areas. They've got environmental problems. They're still run by communists. They've got a very inefficient capital market. They got a corrupt, basically a corrupt banking system, I think. And they got a lot of things that are good about them, but there are a lot of things that are dangerous. So their market opens up ahead of ours every day, right?
That's true.
So if their market should have a little collapse because of their own problems, that makes New York, that makes our stock market get jittery and maybe start going down.
It shouldn't, but it does, yeah.
But that has nothing to do with what's going on with the price of eggs in Sheboygan.
Right, right.
And so, folks, my only point here is, be careful about paying attention to what is going on in the stock market too much. I mean, look around you. Are you still able to build things and innovate, and are customers still coming in your door and buying things? That's the real economy, isn't it, Joe?
Exactly. Sure. No question.
Okay. What about the credit crunch, Joan? Is this going to? Are you guys saying that the credit crunch is going to for mortgages is going to spill over into the rest of the economy?
Well, I mean, I guess the chance is there. We're saying we don't think it's going to happen, but if a credit crunch did occur, you'd be cutting off business investment, and that has its own ripple effects.
Right. Well, I will say that yesterday Sam Norwood was on the show,
mm-hmm.
giving us his report, which he does every month. That he interviews, or I should say, he polls 600 partners in his organization around the country who are running businesses, and they indicated that credit was tightening for them.
Ah.
The price, not only the price, but the availability. If I remember correctly,
that's not too surprising.
Well, the thing is what's happening. That is a true ripple effect, Joan.
Yeah.
If mortgages, a lot of banks are rolling up their local mortgages into securities.
Yes.
And they make a lot of money off these mortgages.
Right.
And if that starts drying up, some of these banks may tighten up on their other credit.
Oh, sure.
Facilities.
That's right.
What about exports, Joan? You guys say that exports should be okay.
Well, we think they will be okay. We say that global growth is likely to be stronger than expected, so that has got to, make people demand more products from this country.
How many years, Joan, have you and I been saying to Europe and the rest of the world, hey, guys, get off your backsides and produce something.
We're carrying the whole load here. We need some help.
So now maybe that's happening.
Right, which would come at a good time.
There's nothing wrong in the world with the rest of the world having a good economy.
Right.
It's good for us, isn't it?
Absolutely.
On many levels.
It. Yes.
And so I'm hoping that that's the case. And I'll tell you, Joan, what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the fundamental reasons for some of that growth to be evident in the next election cycle.
Ah.
I think it would be some evidence there that would be interesting in the debates. 29 after, right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Here are the Stones to take us out.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blassingame.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Gracious, Mr. Humble, at your service. Joan Bright is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, I encourage you to check out my websites because we got lots of good stuff there that's free. Everything we have is free except for the books. If you find a book you want, we're going to ask you to pay for that. But You can find the show that we're doing right now, live, replay, archives, lots of different places. You can podcast, you can download, you can do lots of different things with the audio portion of our websites, and you've got thousands of articles, all arranged in a handy table of contents. You've got Brain Trust members. Please subscribe to my free newsletter. Check it out when you get a chance. I think you'll like it. It's a brand new look this summer that I think you'll like. And, of course, we update our blog every weekday, every Monday through Friday. So that's all there on smallbusinessadvocate.com. And, of course, AskJim.biz is our knowledge base where you can go to find small business answers right now. And so I hope you use that to your advantage. And, of course, that's free as well. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we were talking earlier about the Fed.
Yes.
And they've really got a problem because their primary work when they wake up every morning is to control inflation.
That's right.
Through the money supply and through interest rates.
Right.
But they also have a secondary role, at least something that we all expected them, of opening up what you call the spigot,
yes.
Opening a spigot of money or credit easing,
right?
So that the economy, if it starts slowing down, will encourage people to invest and buy and et cetera, and kind of pick it up a little bit. But all those things can be inflationary, which is contra to their primary goal.
Yes,
so they earn all their money, don't they?
I guess so. I'm still a little jealous of how much they make, but.
Well, the thing is that the Federal Reserve, of course, as we know, Joan, they held pat with their 5.25 Fed funds rate this week.
Right.
That's not going anywhere. I predicted in December of last year that they would, at the end of December, that they would raise. I mean, sorry, that they would lower rates 0.25 point in the third quarter.
Ah.
So they meet again in September, Joan. So I got one more meeting to, for my prediction to hold true.
Right.
We'll see how that goes. You know, one of the things, though, Joan, that's really kind of, I think a lot of people have been hanging their hat on for confidence, is the second quarter gross domestic product number.
Ah.
Which came in at about 3.4.
Yes.
After an abysmal first quarter.
Right.
Of under 1%.
Right.
So the more people I talked to, they were really hanging their hat on that GDP number.
And yet I think we're saying here in our economic forecast that we think growth is going to slow a bit in the second half. So I don't think you're going to see 3.4% again this year, according to us.
And so if that's the case, if we got excited about, the second quarter, maybe we're going to be unexcited about the other quarters.
It sounds like we might be, yeah.
Might be, yeah.
Sorry to blow that one.
Yeah. You're raining on my parade there. Joan, yeah. Let's move over and talk about air travel. It's in the news these days.
Do we have to? I'd really rather not.
I just got back from Sacramento Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, it's not much fun traveling in airlines these days.
Sure isn't.
Through airports. And one of the problems, Joan, what is it that they're saying that we're having the worst on-time schedules right now that we've had in more than a decade?
Oh, yeah. It's abysmal this summer.
They're attributing a lot of that to the antiquated ATC technology, aren't they?
Right. It's, there have been years where you have thunderstorm after thunderstorm in many parts of the country, but I don't, we've had such kind of a heat wave in the country right now and a drought that we really haven't been generating a lot of bad stormy weather or hurricanes.
It hasn't been because of the weather, has it?
The airlines can't really be blaming that right now.
No. But a lot of people are blaming it on the antiquated air traffic control. And Joan, I'm gonna liken this to the Katrina disaster. We could have a disaster. Now, when I say disaster, I don't mean a bunch of crashes as much as I mean just a system that doesn't work.
Right.
Planes left on the ground. That reminds me, that potential reminds me of what happened with Katrina. Joan, New Orleans didn't get hit by hurricane, they got hit by the storm surge of the hurricane.
That's right.
By the backwash.
Right.
And we already knew a long time before it hit that New Orleans wasn't going to be able to withstand that kind of a hurricane. We already know our system, our ATC system, needs to be fixed. I don't know why we can't get it done. 20 till, we'll be right back with Joan Pryde. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And if you haven't been to Kiplinger.com lately, folks, I encourage you to do that. Check out their website at Kiplinger.com. Lots of free stuff there. But also find out more about their publications, including the Kiplinger Letter, which is almost 84 years old. Right, Joan?
Yeah, hard to believe, but true.
Coming up in September, the 84th anniversary, I think it is.
Right.
Started in 1923, and of course, that's the one that Joan and I work off of every day, every week, and they have three biweekly letters as well, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter, and then there's a magazine. Joan, why don't you tell us about that?
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And I bet there's a phone number where people can subscribe.
You're absolutely right, and it's toll-free. It's 800-544-0155.
You can also do that at the website, kiplinger.com, folks, and
sure
ask for that 30-day free trial.
That's right.
Joan, quickly on this air traffic control thing that we talked about before the break, we've got, if I'm not mistaken, we got some of this system is 1950s technology.
That's
We've known that we've got to upgrade this. I don't know what we've got to do, but this is something that I really believe. I'm really afraid that we're going to have not a disaster in terms of loss of lives, but it could be an economic disaster.
Yeah,
that could happen if this thing shuts down somehow. If we lose a bunch of this stuff, and there's a cascading effect, as they say, in the energy industry, in the electricity industry, there's a cascading effect that could happen. I don't know why we're not making this more of a priority, because air travel, as you know, Joan, is increasing exponentially.
Oh, no question.
There are
demand
almost
demand is fast outstripping supply.
I'm on a lot of flights every year, Joan, and I'm almost never on a flight that has any empty seats.
Gee.
Almost every flight is full, and they're asking people to take later flights and take some compensation for that. Joan, let's move down and talk about regulations for small business.
Okay.
You got some good news there, don't you?
Well, yeah, and it's the news is actually in the states, which is kind of good. We're saying that already two dozen states have these helpful laws to challenge burdensome regs, but now I guess some more states are coming on board, and they're saying that any new regulations are going to have to detail the costs and other impacts or other ways that the regulations impact small firms.
And Joan, we already have those kinds of safety features built at the federal level.
Yes.
That's supposed to do that. The Office of Advocacy, currently,
right.
The chief counsel there is Tom Sullivan. And so we have that group, and they're supposed to find out before Congress passes any laws, they have to tell Tom how it's going to affect small business.
Exactly.
So now we have state advocates who are doing the same thing. So hopefully there'll be some teeth in some of these things now.
Yeah, let's hope.
And it'll help small business owners. I hope that's the case. What about the patent office? What's happening over there?
Well, we're saying that it's not going to take as long to get approval for a patent. There's a big backlog. And, boy, we say here that the average wait is 32 months. That's almost 3 years. That's amazing.
Here's the irony of all that, though, Jim.
Yes.
There is some irony. I know a lot of people who are wringing their hands over this, I've talked to some of the patent office folks. I've heard some of them speak, and they do say that they don't have enough work. That there's too many applications. They don't have enough people to do it. They're underfunded at the patent office. But here's another thing, Joan. When you file a patent, and it's approved, and becomes part of the public record, anybody can find your patent application, see how you did it, come up with a variation of it, and knock yours off legally by doing a variation of yours, and maybe even doing an improvement of yours, and making yours obsolete. That's one of the negatives of a patent. It becomes public information.
Right, exactly.
As long as the patent is pending, they can't find what you're doing. You can still commercialize.
That sounds like a big loophole.
Well, it's one of the advantages of a patent pending.
Yeah.
So you can literally take your product to market, you can commercialize it, you can sell it, license it, et cetera, and as long as it's patent pending, nobody knows what your patent is based on.
Ah.
At least they can't find it in the public record. So the truth is, there are some people who are saying, you know what, take as long as you want.
Yeah.
They don't care. So that's a little bit of irony there in the patent pending part. Joan, let's move over and talk about the election coming up next year. It's hard to believe that we're talking about it this soon, but it's been going on for a long time, hasn't it?
Oh,
the campaigns.
Boy, and it's just, you know, these things start earlier and earlier every time.
What do you think about that? You think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, where does it end is my worry.
And eventually, it's sort of like, it's sort of like Christmas. You know, people are, the retailers are starting Christmas earlier and earlier every year.
Yeah, by Halloween they're starting it now.
At some point in time, you know, we're going to start the next campaign the day after the election.
And we almost do that now, which is very worrisome.
So Miss Clinton is pulling ahead of Obama, isn't she?
Yes, that's true. And pretty decisively at this point, I think.
And everybody else, huh?
Yes.
So she's the obvious nominee, right, at this point?
At this point.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Stand by, quick break. 10 till, I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us.
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That damn dumb flying kid sure plays a mean pinball. I see life and it's passing right before my eyes. And the best is the past. Don't regret it. Time to be alive.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the things that you guys proposed this week is the possibility of a Clinton-Obama ticket.
Sounds hard to believe, doesn't it? But
so is that
possible?
Where we are now, Joan? It's basically, some kind of a meltdown by her, notwithstanding, in the future.
Right.
Are we basically just to the point where we're saying, okay, the next big decision is who does Hillary choose as a running mate?
Well, it's beginning to look that way unless someone can really overtake her. At this point, Barack Obama, even though he is trailing, is the only one who at least apparently could do so. Now, again, though, listen to us. Where are we? We're in the middle of 2007, mm-hmm. and we don't even go to the polls for more than another
16.
Year.
16 months, yeah.
So, and remember, we almost crowned Howard Dean King before the first primary, and look what happened to him.
That's the reason I used the term meltdown.
Yeah.
the Dean scream.
Any crazy shouting, yeah.
Exactly, which I actually thought was okay. I didn't have a problem with
it. I saw it. It didn't look that bad to me, but it sort of took on a life of its own.
Well, I think that was where the Democrats turned on one of their own is what happened.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to see how this works out, I'm going to predict, Joan, and this takes no great genius, but I'm going to predict that this is going to be the most interesting election, maybe of all time, this next one.
Wow.
What do you think?
That's saying a lot.
And there's a lot on the line, Joan. There's an awful lot on the line of the future of America.
Right.
Joan, let's talk about
on the tax front? What are some of the new, what's some of the news on taxes?
Well, there's a bunch of little things going on in Congress. Well, maybe not so little to folks, depending on you know, what they're into. But for example, there's a program that where states help children, poor children, get health insurance, and Congress wants to expand that. And in order to do so, we think they're going to raise the tobacco tax by probably 30 cents or so, maybe even more than that. And also, Congress has its eye on private equity funds that go public. That these funds are created as partnerships, and they remain partnerships, so they don't pay corporate tax. And Congress wants them to be required to do so once they go public.
Well, and aren't these people claiming some of this income that they're getting? They're actually it's being structured as capital gains, isn't
it? Right, and that's another whole issue. That's a related but separate issue. What they called carried interest.
Right.
Your interest in the partnership is taxed as capital gain, and there's some question as to whether it should be taxed as ordinary income.
And some people in Congress want it to be taxed as ordinary
right,
income.
Right, because you have these, you know, very wealthy fund managers who are paying a 15% tax rate.
Right.
When the average person may be paying 25% or more.
Right, right. Joan, what's the news on energy?
Besides oil prices going up, we're saying that there's some promising developments in alternative fuels, and we're talking about a whole bunch of different things: oil from shale, water power, wave energy converters, and wind power.
And you say here it should make oil shale economical when crude is as low as $35 a barrel. What does that mean?
Well, right now, I guess oil would have to be $60 a barrel for oil from shale to break even.
I got you. But even if it got as low as $35 a barrel, boy, wouldn't that be a high-class problem, Joan?
I would love to have that problem.
One thing, Joan, that's interesting is you guys point out that venture capitalists are starting to look more towards smaller startups.
Yes, and that's the first time in a long time. Now, when was the dot-com bust? How many years ago? I guess 2000
7 or 8 years.
And since then, they've been kind of skittish about putting new money into new ventures, and we think they're getting less skittish at this point.
Well, that could be good news, but I still say, ladies and gentlemen, I've spoken to a lot of venture capitalists, especially over the last few months, and Joan, the chances of a small business, even a startup, getting venture capital is really very small. Don't count on venture capitalists to be your capital savior.
You need to look for those angels instead.
Angels and your own sweat equity and bank loans.
And the SBA.
That's exactly right. SBA guaranteed loans. That's exactly right. Well said, Joan. Hey, thanks, Joan, for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. She's with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.